Accession number 14881, reel 4.
Much of the traffic, signals traffic in particular, and much of the effort that was made in Montgomery's headquarters immediately after this was concerned with setting up the final full surrender of all the Germans in Europe, which took place at Reims about a week later when Jodl went to Reims to sign. Eisenhower, I believe, refused to take part and was represented by his chief of staff, Beadle Smith. But that was the final thing. But during that time, and for about 10 days after that final surrender, fortnight perhaps, everybody on the Allied side was very worried by the fact that Dönitz, who'd been named the Führer after the death of Hitler, was behaving like a Führer and was running what he was referring to as his own government in Flensburg. Well, everybody knew, of course, that he was in Flensburg. He was surrounded with people who regarded him very highly because they were all part of his naval establishment. And he had been for many years head of the German Navy and I think very respected by the Navy people. But he was running what appeared to be a government in Flensburg. And so it was decided on the highest level, on the Eisenhower level, that a stop must be put to this. And that Dönitz and all the other members of the so-called provisional German government were to be taken into custody. And, of course, what the people who took this decision knew, but what the Germans didn't know, was that they were going to be taken into custody in order to appear at the Nuremberg trials, which were already then being thought about and prepared. And so Second Army, which was the nearest large headquarters to Flensburg, was asked to provide a group of people to go to Flensburg and to take this German delegation, this German government, into custody. Backed up by a part, at least, of an infantry battalion of the Cheshire Regiment, which had been moved up there. And so we went from a small group of us who didn't have to be German-speaking, although several of us were, and that obviously helped. A small group of us went up to Flensburg to do this job, and this was on the 23rd of May. So it was almost 3 weeks after the other negotiations. And the first thing that happened was that a delegation, mainly Americans, but there were some British officers involved too, arrived in a ship, and Dönitz and his colleagues were asked to appear, or told to appear, on board this ship, which was anchored in Flensburg. And they were all sat; they were all made to sit down in a cabin, and an American officer told them that the decision had been taken, that their so-called government must stop, and they were going to be taken into custody. And they had an hour or two to go and pack their bags and make themselves ready to be taken off. And this was an entire government. I've got the names somewhere in one of the scrap of paper written down somewhere, and there was a finance minister and a interior minister and all these people who had titles which were sort of cabinet titles. And they were all being looked after and guarded and generally protected by everything that was left of the German Navy. Not only on ships, but also chaps with the guns all round. And so they were told this. They went back home to their various homes in the Flensburg area. And the people in my party were told off, one by one or two by two, to go to various houses to collect Mr. So-and-so and to take them off to the airport, in fact, to the airport. And I had to take off Dönitz. One of my colleagues took off Speer, who was a much more interesting character than Dönitz, and the one I would like to have spent more time with, really. But Dönitz, we took him to his house, first of all, and he went in saying he was going to pack his bag, disappeared into his bedroom, and as far as we can make out, he put on all the underwear he possessed, which was three or four lots, one on top of the other. So that when he came out again, he looked like the Michelin man. And this was because he'd been told, apparently, that he was going to become a prisoner of war, and he had visions of going to a prisoner of war camp and suffering from the cold, although this was in May, after all, and that he'd put on everything he had to make sure he was warm. Anyway, he did that, and after a bit of argy-bargy and pushing the guards to one side and that sort of thing, we got Dönitz into a car and took him to the airport. What I didn't know then, but which I heard only a few minutes afterwards, was that one of the other people in the Dönitz so-called government was the chap who'd replaced him as the head of the German Navy, who was my old friend von Friedeburg, who had appeared with Montgomery 3 weeks before. And von Friedeburg was also being arrested, and he'd been the one who got so upset when he was talking to Montgomery and had wept. And when one of my friends went with von Friedeburg to his house for him to collect his luggage, he excused himself, went into the bathroom, took a cyanide pill out of a bathroom cabinet and swallowed it and died virtually in front of these people. So that was the end of von Friedeburg. So we didn't get him on a plane at all, but we got all the others on the plane. Dönitz and Speer were the important ones. And we took them from Flensburg by plane to Luxembourg. Not to the town of Luxembourg itself, but to Mondorf-les-Bains, which is a little spa in the hills outside Luxembourg. And we didn't know it at the time, but that was already being used as an internment center for all the big shots of the former Nazi regime. And Goering, for example, was already there. And it was run by a notorious American colonel called Colonel Andrews. I shall never forget him. He shook hands with all of us when we arrived, and he said, "My name is Andrews," he said. "I look after this lot down here. Do you know why they put me in charge of this? It's because I hate Krauts." Oh, dear. Anyway, they were all there, or the ones that had been captured until then were all there. And we added our lot to them. It was the first time I'd ever been in a plane, apart from anything else, flying from Flensburg to Luxembourg. And then we had a devil of a job to get back home again, because we were more or less unofficial. You know, we didn't have a... It was difficult to know how we could get a lift. There we were in Luxembourg, and we said to people, we've got to get back to Lüneburg in Germany, Second Army headquarters. Well, the whole place was in such a turmoil, as you can imagine, with prisoners of war and refugees. We ended up by going by jeep to Brussels and talking somebody in giving us a lift on a plane to Hamburg.
What impression did Dönitz make on you?
Dönitz made virtually no impression on me at all. He remained almost completely silent. Didn't seem to be close to any of his own people at all. I think he had been close to von Friedeburg. I think that was true, and he may have been affected by his death. I don't know, but he didn't really make any impression. There was a blank there. On the other hand, Speer made an extraordinary impression, because while they were in Flensburg, before we took off from the airport, they were interviewed by the press. All the press people had arrived, and they gave a sort of press conference in a yard in Flensburg. There are a lot of pictures of this, by the way, a lot of photographs of this in the picture archives of the museum.
Photographic department.
Yes. And there you can see the pictures of them being questioned by the press. And Speer was certainly by far the most intelligent.
Did you see the body of von Friedeburg?
No, I didn't. I've got a photograph of it. But I didn't see his body. That one of my friends was responsible for him. What I did see was when we got back to Lüneburg, either the same day or the following morning, I saw the body of Himmler, who in the meantime, unknown to us, had been picked up near Bremen, brought back to Lüneburg for interrogation, or rather brought back really for identification, because he denied that he was Himmler, but they suspected he was and were trying to prove it. And he succeeded in committing suicide in the military police post in Lüneburg. And when we got back, we were told the story about Himmler being there, and everybody thought this was a joke. You know, when we got back, we said, well, we've made sure Dönitz and company are in safe hands. And they said, well, while you were away, we've been looking after Himmler. We said, what do you mean? And it wasn't a joke at all. He was there. And they took us in to show him to us.
What did it look like?
A body. Anyway, that was really the envoi, as I believe it's called in certain French poetry. That was the envoi of the whole thing.